sisters are I hold no more. Oh, 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 oh,
listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
Have you gotten your flu shot? It's never too late to protect yourself, your family, and your community against the flu. This year, it is more important than ever. Black and African Americans, people of color, pregnant people, people without health insurance or a regular health care provider, people with pre-existing conditions like asthma, diabetes, and cardiovascular disease, and people 65 and older are encouraged to get a flu shot. Multnomah County Health Department and Portland Community College are hosting a free weekly drive-through flu vaccine and COVID-19 testing clinic that will be held every Wednesday from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. until March 31, 2021, at PCC's Cascade Campus Parking Lot 1, located at 701 North Jessup Street in Portland. Entrance is on North Albina Street. You can drive through, bike through, or walk up to. To reserve an appointment for a flu shot or COVID test, call 503-988-8939. That's 503-988-8939. This campaign is a project of the Racial and Ethnic Approaches to Community Health and the Communicable Disease Services programs. It is made possible with funding from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Public Service Announcements.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kbu.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available at our website. The Finance Committee meets on the third Thursday of the month at 4:30 p.m. Please visit our website at kbu.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. That's 90.7 FM or streaming online at kboo.fm 24 hours a day. Coming up next is Hard Knock Radio. And while you're waiting for Hard Knock Radio to get started, maybe use that little bit of time there to donate to KBOO on GiveGuide. We're trying to reach that end of the year goal. So show your support today, kbu.fm/give. All right, up next, Hard Knock Radio.
1, 2, 3, 4. Y'all ready for this?
Ladies and gentlemen.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 0.
Never been done before. Never been done in this country. In this country.
Davey D, Hard Knock Radio, hanging out with you this afternoon. You know, the big story over the past few days is the vaccine coming from Pfizer and another company. There's a story that just came out that talked about the Trump administration or people within that wanting to spread disinformation and really spread the virus, so that the coronavirus, so that it hits younger people and we can have this strategy called herd immunity. And then we have just the record number of deaths that have been coming across, of people dying from this virus. And so we wanted to talk to somebody who's been on the front lines almost from the beginning. She's been a constant voice for us here on Hard Knock Radio. It's Dr. Kim Rhodes. So I just was joking with you when you asked how am I doing. I'm like, how are you doing? Because a lot of your colleagues who have been on the front line, who have been doing the testing, who have been going out and really trying to enlighten us as to what's happening, you all have not been immune to the ravages of this disease itself. So let's talk a little bit about it. What's the lay of the land in this last month of 2020?
Yeah, well, what we're seeing is a surge that I don't think anybody really has a good explanation for. I know that the testing that was going on in San Francisco got set up in for United in Health got set up on either side of Thanksgiving. So a couple days before and then a few days after. And what they saw was that the positivity rate in the days before was around 2%. The rate after was 8%. And I know that people would like to think that that was because of people traveling and gathering for Thanksgiving, but the time frame in which they did it was too close to Thanksgiving to really reflect that. So that means that there's community spread that we don't understand right now. So any additional cases and deaths that we see related to gathering at Thanksgiving are going to be on top of that increase that I just explained. And it's an increase, again, that we don't really know why this is happening. It suggests that there's something about the virus that we're not fully understanding about how it is communicated and transmitted in community settings.
So that leaves two things. One is the mutation of the virus and whether a new strand and what have you is coming about, or if it's behaving in ways we didn't anticipate. Let's just look at that. One thing that comes to mind, and you tell me if we're right or wrong, could it be that many of us are back indoors? You know, I know there were large gatherings, and we talked about this at the lake and other places, but, you know, some of the, maybe we didn't see the surge because there were a lot of people outside, but now everybody's indoors, you know, from Halloween on up. Do you think that may have something to do with the spread?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think people underappreciate the difference between being indoors and outdoors in terms of transmission. But a short period of time indoors, even wearing masks, even being socially distanced, can facilitate the spread of the virus in the absence of ventilation. So either having a window open, having a door open, makes a tremendous difference in the number of people who would get infected. But if you're indoors with the doors closed, even if you're wearing a mask and socially distanced, the virus, it does aerosolize, so it does hang in the air, as well as the respiratory droplets. So it can sort of fill the room with virus. And then the other thing that was not emphasized, except for in the hospitals, was to wear a face shield. Because you can actually contract the virus through absorption of viral particles through the pink mucosa in the eye. And so if you're indoors in a closed space, even if you're wearing a mask, if you're not wearing a face shield and the room is full of virus, then your risk of getting infected, approaches something quite significant.
It's interesting you said that, because I was actually told to leave a store. AT&T, I put them on blast since I called them up and checked. Went down there to go pay a bill, and I actually had a face shield on, and the guy gave me this long song and dance about how I can't have it and whoop-de-whoop, ignoring the fact that there was an article in the New York Times that said that face shields may be the way to go. So I listened to him, guess he didn't know all the journalists that covers this. And then I said, where did you get this information? He goes, well, you know, this is in the handbook and blue, right? And I'm bringing this up for a reason. So he went down there and then talked about his cousin who's a doctor, and that I absolutely needed to have, you know, something covering, you know, I couldn't wear the face shield. So I, you know, being the person that I am and petty like that, I actually called AT&T and they knew nothing about that and, you know, and sent me the little thing of the memo. And the thing is that here was a guy who was a manager of a store that was giving out information and then tried to use authority, you know, and, you know, my cousin's a doctor, so therefore take this off, which actually I was in many ways doing the thing that was most preventive. So how much of this misinformation, especially when it comes from people who, in this case, was a manager of a store, but it may be a cop, it may be a school teacher or somebody else who emphatically tries to tell you with authority that, you know, you don't need a mask or you do need this type of mask. How much of that is contributing to these surges?
Good question. I don't know if I could quantify it, but, you know, if you want to talk about the negative impact of disinformation, I think you really have to go to the top and all of the confusion at the beginning of the pandemic. Mm-hmm. I remember hosting a first community meeting in March. In fact, it was March 17th. Of this year, and my community advisory board at the Cancer Center, of course, had questions about COVID. And we talked about masks and we talked about gloves. And at the time, the recommendation was don't wear masks, not really gonna help you.
Wow, that's so what was being said.
So I parroted those words and then had to, importantly, retract them, encourage mask wearing, and acknowledge the original misinformation. Now, we found out later that part of that misinformation came because the federal stockpile of personal protective equipment was questionable, and that the recommendation came from a place of not wanting the public to use up all of the PPE so that the healthcare workers wouldn't have any. That's not a justification, but that explains a bit about why they said what they said, which was completely wrong. So if you start with that, you know, we said, don't wear masks. Now we're saying wear masks. Then we said any facial covering works. And now we're saying, well, the kerchief, the bandana, and these gaiters actually don't work well. And so now we know that. But the problem is the initial insult of the misinformation is what sticks for people. So I'm not surprised by other sort of middle management people giving out the same misinformation and all of us being misinformed. It's almost like we've got, you know, these 30 days to wait until we can get an administration that will give it to us straighter. Mm-hmm. And try to have a unifying front. I think it's not only the misinformation, it's the politicization of what you choose to do that has made it worse. So it is that politicization has given strength to people on the side of not mask wearing to make an argument for why you shouldn't wear a mask. So then suddenly everybody on all sides are justified rather than us agreeing on the true science about the virulence of this virus. I mean, the fact that you can be infected through your eyeballs, I think is incredible.
Let me ask you this, Dr. Rhodes. I started off by saying there were two things. And in the beginning of the show, I talked about the article that came out that talked about people within the health administration of Trump. I want to say Paul Alexander. He's like a doctor and is out in Canada, but he's part of this administration. Was, you know, they have these emails that talked about, hey, we need to infect as many people as possible and have the herd mentality, right? How deadly is this? Because, you know, now interestingly, the Trump administration, which were famous for not wearing masks as recently as these hearings where Rudolph Giuliani demanded that somebody sitting next to him take off their mask, yeah, right? You know, they kind of distanced themselves from these emails, but there they are. You know, James Clyburn, the whip of the House, showed them, and there they are. So they were, infect as many young people, let's get the herd immunity thing. So first of all, how does that work? Is there any validity to this? Is this a debate that you all in the medical profession have been having in terms of a strategy that could possibly have slowed down this virus? Because it definitely was in play with the Trump administration.
Yeah, and it's a fantasy. And it's a fantasy that favors, you know, what this virus has kind of put into question is capitalism over the health of the body politic, right? So if we shut everything down, the businesses go down, the economy crashes, et cetera. So this idea of let everybody get herd immunity is a valuing of you know, financial concerns over the health and well-being of the people. So you could recommend that we let everyone get infected because at about 60 to 70% of the population being infected, there will be presumably antibodies in 60 to 70% of the population, which would then keep subsequent infection down. At the time, and then, you know, what could you, you could keep all the businesses open and go along with business as usual. But the reality is at the time when they were writing these emails, the number of infections were around 1, 2, 3% of the American population. So if you can imagine that at that level, you've got, you know, 3 million people infected and what we need to get to is 60%, then just multiply that 3 million by a lot, right. You know, and accept all those deaths. And then the other question is, so now we're at about 16 million infections.
We're still a long way off. If you're we're nowhere near that where we need
exactly.
to be. If you were to follow that mentality.
Exactly. And with those 16 million infections, we have 300,000 deaths. So think about what it's going to look like to get to 60% of the population infected. So that's just, it's a ridiculous, untenable, capitalistic, you know, money over people kind of approach. And at the time, I also think the administration thought that the people who were getting infected were people who were expendable in our society.
That was going to be my next question, because, you know, the numbers I'm seeing is that, you know, 53,000 deaths with African-Americans, 50,000 with Latinos, many of the people, essential workers. My sister, she survived, but she was out for a month and was a census worker who took all the precautions and told me that she was, you know, she had to go to these places where people were like, I ain't wearing no damn mask, and stand there while they're writing and, you know, and these non-believers. So she wound up being out for a good month, and thank God she recovered. But, well, we don't even know the long-term effects.
That's
you know,
right.
She lived, but she was out for a month. So not only did she lose her payments, because you only get paid if you work, you know, mm-hmm. she was one of those essential workers. She was sick, and that was scary. Let's talk about these deaths, because for some reason there seems to be a disconnect, even in our own community, with people who have been dying.
Yeah, so what there are so many different numbers, and I think of it as like ways to shade the truth with statistics. The number that we don't really talk about, and this is the number that affects African-American people, is the case fatality rate. What we typically talk about is death rate. So we say, okay, this many people are infected, this many people have died. And we look at those numbers and we compare those numbers just by themselves. Or we say as a percent of the population, of the total population. But what we're not doing is looking at what's called the case fatality rate, which is who gets infected and then goes on to die. Because that's, I think, what matters, right? We can talk prevention at the front end and try to help people avoid getting infected in the first place. But then the next layer is, if you get infected, what is your risk for dying? And even here in Alameda County, it's really interesting, because if you look at the total number of infections per population, you see this thing we've talked about a number of times, the Latinx community has really high rates of infection per population. And the African-American folks in Alameda County are about fourth. So they're behind Asian and white in terms of case numbers per population, infections per population. And when you look at death, you go, well, look, African-Americans have the highest death rate per population. Second is Latinx, and then followed by white and Asian. But if you look at, and that's just per population, how many people have died from COVID. But if you look at the case fatality rate, where you say who got it and who died, what you see is African-Americans, again, off the charts. If you get it, we're more likely to die. Fourth, not second, but fourth is the Latinx community. And what that means and what that tells you is that although there are a large number of infections in the Latinx community, the risk of dying from that infection is much lower for the Latinx population than it is for African-American people.
What's the reason for that? Is it lack of care or is there some other factor?
Well, if your infection rate, if your death rate really exceeds the percent of infections, then it's got to be something more than the infection itself. So if people get infected, you expect a certain risk of dying. But if that risk of dying and those who have died exceeds the infection rate, it means it's the infection plus some other things. We know in cancer, in California, we know from research and studies that I've published that differences in care actually could close the disparities gap in death for colorectal cancer, pancreas, gastric, which is stomach cancer, liver cancer we've looked at, and we've even looked at some of the liquid tumors like leukemia. And so I have to wonder, of course, because that's the perspective that my research comes from, is what happens when people get to the hospital with a positive COVID test or feeling bad and then turn up with, you know, having a positive test. And just anecdotally, we've heard stories of people being turned away and not given a test because they sound like they're low risk or low suspicion. We've heard about people who go in and are diagnosed, but then don't get admitted and get sent home. And so, of course, my mind is wondering what is happening to African-American people when they show up sick and needing a test, or they show up knowing that they have COVID. Whether or not they get admitted, do they sit in the emergency room for a long time? When they do get admitted, do they get supplemental oxygen? Do they get a ventilator and intubation if they need that? You know, we know and we've heard stories of hospital systems having to ration care because they're really at the max of what they can handle. Whenever there's rationing of healthcare and that there is a portion that needs to be given to African-American people, we tend to be last on the list. I mean, I just want to be honest about that. And so I do have my own questions about whether or not there are differences in the quality of care. We can't directly study that yet because there's always a delay in how that data emerges for large-scale analysis. But I have been already in conversation with the folks at the Office of Statewide Health Planning and Development about, you know, when that data will be ready so that we can start asking questions. I really want to know. And a colleague of mine published a paper that we jokingly used to call chest pain while black because he did an analysis of how quickly black patients with a complaint of chest pain get out of the emergency room, get an aspirin, get a beta blocker, and get treatment for a presumed heart attack. And it was a significant difference in the amount of time that Black people had to wait in order to get that kind of care. And I believe that was actually a national study. So I'm just wondering if we have the similar kinds of things going on with COVID, and I wouldn't be surprised if they are.
We've been talking with Dr. Kim Rhodes, getting a lay of the land with the COVID situation. So now the big elephant in the room, you know, the vaccination. So we have three things colliding. We have anti-vaxxers who have been, you know, trying to exploit weaknesses and concerns that people have who show up. I mean, they show up on my timelines, probably couldn't care about black people, never been around. All of a sudden, you mention COVID and people all up in your conversation and trying to find an angle in which to exploit. Oh, you know, they gave shots in Tuskegee. You got to watch it now. It's like, well, what do you know about Tuskegee? Do you even know where it's at? What year did this happen? You know, and then you start questioning. They don't have an answer, but you know that that's an angle that they're using. So they're out there. Then we have the natural cynicism that exists within the Black community, and for good reasons, some of which you just explained. The article that just came out the other day with the Trump administration, and just the general bad experiences when you go to the hospital. You know, I didn't get pain medication when they gave me a needle. They didn't operate on me. The doctors were mean. So there's a lot of people that's like, you know what? I'm not doing it. And then you have folks who, you know, firmly believe Western medicine is all for profit. This is a crock, and they don't want to go that way at all. The argument being made is similar to the anti-vaxxers. You don't know what they're putting in these needles, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And, you know, these are people that will use all sorts of Western tools, including computers, which can radiate you, and internet, which can harm you. But that's okay. They're locked in on the whole, you know, what's in the vaccine argument. So those are three things that are hitting. And how are you making sense of this, and what's a path to take?
I would add one more thing to that.
What's that?
That list. And I heard this in a community meeting with one of our local institutions. So, well, you weren't hot to test us. Why are you so excited to get us a vaccine? And I think that's a really valid point, because there's a way in which, well, whatever testing you're getting, or we'll make it available, and then not making it available. I mean, part of the reason, you know, Umoja is doing what it's doing was to supplement something. Same with United in Health, is like to get people testing. So to then turn it around and be like, well, you're the most vulnerable populations, you're the hardest hit, and therefore you need to get the vaccine. I mean, what needs to happen is more dialogue. And what in my Office of Community Engagement at the UCSF Cancer Center, the thing we don't do is tell people what to do, because the paternalism of the healthcare system is part of how we got into the places that we are, you know, where we are now in terms of the relationship and trust. And I use that word, like there's so much packed in there to talk about. But I think the issue is, you know, how can we provide people information and then make room for their agency so that they can make a decision about what to do? And I think people get afraid of that because of the groups that you mentioned. There are lots of groups who, when you give them the chance to make their own decision, they're going to make a decision that's against the well-being of the public health.
Right.
But what I believe, particularly for African-American people, is that what has eroded trust, and I'm not even gonna, you know, Tuskegee is just so gigantic. There's just so much more to institutions in America that were founded on the backs of inequity. I mean, it's just, you know, it's too much. But the one thing that just doesn't generally happen is an ongoing dialogue. Because in that time that you spend with that ongoing dialogue, people are getting the impression that actually somebody cares. Because we're here to give information. We're not here to extract anything. We're not even here to extract a commitment from you that you will take the vaccine. Mm. But instead, we're here to open the dialogue. And what we try to do in our office is give people access directly to the investigators. And because I'm part of the institution, what I get to say to the investigators is, look, y'all talk about how you want to build trust, et cetera. The way to build trust is to stay present and to stay in the room. And when you get asked the hard question, don't run and dodge. Own what you don't know. Own the places where mistakes have been made. And so we have those facilitated discussions. And when I can see my colleagues, because of course I live in that world too, kind of dodging and weaving and leaving things out, then I'm going to bring those things up and say, maybe we need to talk about that. So I feel like it's the free flow of questions, even when they're hard, even when they feel accusatory, and the willingness to be responsive to that, I think is important. Because where we are right now is that there's so little transparency, and there's been such, you know, untrustworthy behavior, that one of the things that I keep thinking about is we're not all gonna get the current vaccines that you're hearing about on the news. The Pfizer vaccine is going to be gone by summer. Everybody mark my words. Because that cold chain management is untenable for small populations, for rural settings. Community groups will not be able to handle it. They don't have a minus 80 freezer when the thing needs to be kept. Everybody keeps talking about minus 80. It actually needs to be stored at minus 90 something. So, so that once Moderna comes, which is the second one that you made reference to, Moderna, which was developed with the National Institutes of Health, that one is more temperature stable. So that one will be around. But then what the general population is really going to get is a vaccine that is made out of an adenovirus, which is common to other vaccines that we have seen in our lives and that we sort of accept as normal. But here's a question. So when you go to vaccinate the general population, you say, then they're looking, they go, where's the freezer? Why aren't you keeping this thing cold? If you don't keep it cold, it may not work, right? We haven't thought about really educating people to understand, okay, there are multiple vaccines. They don't all need to be kept cold. So if you're not getting the cold one, it doesn't mean you're getting a fake vaccine.
Right.
We're not thinking ahead about what regular folks think about, you know, in their daily lives, and trying to address that by actually putting out all of the education, all of the information that we know now. And so as Umoja Health goes into its second iteration of still doing testing for African American community, I'm really thinking about what are we going to do on vaccine and information sharing? Because what's great about now is the vaccine's not ready. So we're not going to be there telling people you need to get a vaccine. Instead, we're going to be providing information. People on the test site are going to be asking questions because it's in the news. And so we're going to have community members who, because they participate in the weekly meeting, are going to have that, like, a little additional information because somebody already asked that question at the community meeting.
Right.
That someone on the test site will be able to get that information from a community member, not from the institution, not from something with a label, not from a big institution that may have an agenda that doesn't align with the health of Black people.
Right. So, you know, just a couple of things, and I'm glad that you laid this out for us, Dr. Rhodes. Because we are heard in a lot of places, we were very intentional about how we were going to have this conversation and with who. We get hit with a lot of folks who are like, oh, we have this expert. You know, this is so-and-so from Harvard. And, you know, and that's good. I mean, they're accessible and they're wanting to come on. But our thing was we had to look to see who has these track records, so that when we have these conversations, we can go, that sister there, she was in Hunters Point, you know, without the cameras, or she was over here asking these questions and she was sitting up there kicking up dust in these rooms, you know, for our people, which is important. Or this other one, oh, they was with Doctors with Borders, they was down in, you know, so we were looking for folks that I think have a genuine love for the community. Which is weirdly what I hear you say. Like, you love the community, so you know you're repping all of us when you're in that room. It's not just you. It's like Hunters Point, East Oakland, West Oakland, North Richmond, you know, and there's a few others, you know, folks, Dr. Jeffrey Watson and Desmond, and, you know, there's a few folks that have always been out there. You know, Desmond out of Richmond, that have been there. And so we wanted to, you know, I'm saying that so our listeners, when they hear that you're on here, not just because you're a doctor, we can get a doctor. It's you're on here because you love Black people and you fight for Black people and you're advocating for Black people long before there was a pandemic, during the pandemic, and after the pandemic, you'll be there. And so that's where we come from. And I think, you know, that sort of relationship is super duper important, and it's one, as you were just talking, it's one that's lacking with so many people. You know, the paternalism, you don't know, you know, let me give you the authoritative, dude, you don't, first of all, you don't know what the hell we've been through, you know, you don't know what our lived experiences are and what we've seen. And so, you know, you have to have trust, and trust comes with mutual respect. So, you know, that's where we come from. And we're so appreciative of you being able to come on and share with us and be patient and, you know, let us know the real, you know, so that we can be armed with that sort of information. That's really frontline freedom fighting in ways that I don't think are often described. So, you know, we got to thank you from the bottom of my heart for that, you know. And I got family members in the medical field, you know, but this is important. So with that being said,
thank you so much for inviting me. I do think, you know, if it helps, I have a degree from Harvard, but you know, that's totally unimportant. It's completely unimportant, right? It's really about how we connect to each other as humans and how we can see what we have in common and where we share common space. And then the second part is about humility. It's about being willing to stay in the conversation, even when you don't know, and to say, I don't know. Right. But the thing that I see that I have, and as a first generation college graduate, you know, these are the stories of my family, as like the things that we're dealing with are things that I've seen in my own family. It's just about having the humility to see, you know, that I can see myself in the position of a layperson who doesn't have all the training and then who doesn't know. And so it's an exchange, because all of the community organizations and the community members and activists that I work with, I learn so much from them. And I feel like now that I have access to the resources, I want to bring those resources to start to answer those questions or to lift up, you know, things that are already going on in the community that are making positive change.
Real talk. As we close out, Dr. Rhodes, I know you said you're not telling people what to do, but until we are armed with additional information or that vaccine is in front of us, what do you advocate that we do moving forward to make sure that we are protected, to make sure that we are healthy, and even we are looking in the right direction or a good direction where we can dig deep and get some of this good information?
My advice is for people who are in positions of influence like yourself to talk openly. If you're questioning whether or not you're going to get the vaccine, to seek out the information that will help you be able to make your decision. For me, you know, I'm excited. I can't wait to get a vaccine because I'm so sick of COVID. So I think that again, I want to just continue to encourage people to have the dialogue, to ask their questions, to not be shy about having doubts about the medical establishment, and for folks who have the platform to share that dialogue and broadcast that dialogue so other people who probably have the same questions get an opportunity to hear the answers. We have several months before the general population is going to get vaccinated. And so I think like this is a critical time to be just having conversation, because once things become sort of more normalized, it won't have all of this like kind of a special something around it that makes people suspicious because it's new.
Are there side effects that you all are monitoring and looking at or that you're hearing about?
Well, so far, I think the two big adverse events that people have heard about are two patients who had an anaphylactic reaction. And that what that is a major allergic reaction, which can cause sort of total body inflammation in places where you don't want it, like in your throat, because the swelling can cause the closure of the throat and then you can't breathe. What they're saying about those two folks, and this happened in the United Kingdom, is that they had a history of allergies. So for example, people who are allergic to peanuts or eggs or strawberries, people who need to carry an epinephrine pen with them. Those folks right now, there's some caution around whether or not they should get the vaccine. I don't think that's been fully worked out. We haven't heard the details about the adenovirus vaccine that's probably gonna come out first, which is, I believe it's going to be the AstraZeneca vaccine. We are going to be hosting the investigator at UCSF who's associated with that study to talk to us on February 17th. That actually will be public. And if you can't make it, we record it and we put it up, post it up on our website, unitedinhealthoakland.org. So it'll be publicly available for everyone to hear the conversation. We've asked her to talk about those adverse events. But other than that, what we've been hearing is the less severe things, like my arm was sore,
which happens all the time when you get a shot.
Yeah.
You know, that's not unusual, you know.
Yeah, okay. Exactly.
Well, look, we appreciate you taking time out. This is Dr. Kim Rhodes, who, as I said, has been walking us through this historic moment in time with the coronavirus, the pandemic that happens every 100 years, at least in these states. And so we've been living through it. We're glad that you've been informing us. If people want to get a hold of you or the organizations that you roll with, is there an address or a number or anything?
They can go to the unitedinhealthoakland.org website, and there is an information email address that they can write to. Alternatively, they can reach the Office of Community Engagement at the Helen Diller Family Comprehensive Cancer Center, UCSF, at our Gmail address. And I'll just say that slowly and I'll repeat it. It's HD, like David, FECCOCE at gmail.com. And that's HDFCCCOCE at gmail.com.
There you have it. Dr. Rhodes, thank you so much. We're going to take a break here on Hard Knock Radio. We'll be right back.
Hard Knock, turn the speakers in your car up. Quality program, turn in for the real talk. Don't stop. EMN at it again. Sandman, Adamant, Chris Juwan, Cam. Yeah. Innovation, stimulating ill conversation. Anything else, just imitation. Simulation, step into the zone. The Bay Area zone. Hard Knock Radio, let's go. Big shout out to Nita and Davey D. Yeah, right, feel me. Yeah. Honing down at Hard Knock Radio.
Hard Knock Radio.
Kind of crazy, though. Oakland, stand up.
Yeah. Stand up.
Ensemble, Big Night Wolves.
Yeah. Kansas City.
Yeah.
Bellevue. Come on, check out.
Why every novice think they hard knock when they ain't going all in and ain't paid the cost or the fee? Hating that they made they beats, trying to eat to the belly from the steel gray beef. Say, please, maybe they'll save you a seat at the table with a great bread making a speech. Say, some peace to the lovers I need.
Real Talk Radio.
You and I rocking with the best in the West.
West Coast. Monday through Friday.
Sing it, Chris.
East Coast. Dance out.
What does it mean to be sheltered in place if the place you sheltered in don't feel safe? And how do we become so qualified to judge and chastise and lose the ability to empathize with those who don't feel safe inside for whatever reason? You know, you sometimes ain't got the luxury of feeling safe at home when you ain't got a safe space to call your own. No privacy, no courtesy, no bed, nor peace of mind. You're grateful for a roof over your head, but that's not where everybody spends their time. So by this time, you're already mastered trying to stay out the way. And you already overheard chatter about not overextending your stay. And trying to find resources hard without a computer or Wi-Fi. Plus, employment opportunities are scarce and local businesses are boarded up. So you're being honest with yourself, asking like, why try? And it's not that everybody who's outside right now is even trying to be selfish. You know, some don't even want to be outside. They're just trying to avoid the insult of being displaced inside. You see, there's a lot of uncomfortable going on. And despite what you see on your timeline, not everybody's dancing to the same song. You know, some are dancing to the tune of loneliness and some ain't dancing at all. Some have their phones glued to their face and some ain't got no phones at all. No homes at all. No clocks on the wall. No time at all. No TikTok. No selfies. No hashtags. No memes. No statuses with complaints about how much food they overate. You know, some are still trying to find a meal and some are still trying to find their meal. I saw a broken car glass on my run around the block today. I must got a lot running through my mind today. Probably an indicator that I need to be still and pray, but the fact is we are all in this together, and the ones who judge and lead without love must not know no better. The world's lungs are under attack, and we're wasting precious breath on judgment, conspiracy theories about the government. Remember, we don't all have the same privilege when it comes on to access to information, and we're not all watching the same station. And after 10 years as an administrator in special education, I can tell you we all learn different. Matter of fact, it's time for a deep breath. It's time for a reset. Creatives, be gentle with yourselves. It's okay to take a break. Your value as a person is not defined by the art you create. Some of us are called to be light, and all of us are called to be salt. Preserve your well-being. kindness be your currency. Let Christ's compassion lead the way. And despite what economists say, empathy is the new wave. And it's the same as the old one too. It's all cyclical. And if you believe that money makes the world go round, then yeah, this standstill can be scary. But there are those of us who learn to speak without talking and move without walking. This is a journey to the inside. No more sweeping it under the rug. That rug is filled. And yes, the pain is present, but the love is real. So, today I'm gonna be patient with myself. The goal is to be present, not perfect. And parents, you don't have to be perfect. This ain't no normal homeschooling. Your children can feel the world's stress. And under such circumstances, no one learns their best. And you are doing your best. And might I add, a damn good job? And so are our essential workers too. And right now I'm gonna say a special prayer for our social workers and educators too. And all the folks doing food accessibility work, I see you. Three black chefs.
I'm giving thanks for the healing. And it's in this attitude of gratitude that I release this word. And so this word is grounded in truth and gratitude. This word is grounded in a knowingness and a faith. And so I'm releasing this word into that universal law, knowing it is done and complete and perfect. And so if this resonates with you in any type of way, please join me in grounding it by simply saying, and so it is. Yes.
They go like this, bitch, you decide your future. Who are the leaders? Who are the shooters? Who are the leaders? Who are the shooters? Who are the leaders? Who are the shooters? Like this, bitch, you decide your future. Who are the leaders? Who are the shooters?
Yo, you ain't never come around in my casa, I know, but you don't know the pain of my raza. Just came to paint a picture. I'm the man with the paint in the pickup. I'm the one with paletas de agua, de piña, de coco, de mango, de guava.
You don't wanna mess around with my squad. We are the rebels, we are outlaws.
I came up with a couple of gods who always kept a nine in the glove of the dodge. Koran in the right hand and left middle finger for them jump out boys when they run up on the squad. Said we got John Jackson, born faction, hold the world hostage. When the camera's the pot, that's how you know imposters. If they ain't no seeing in them boys, they double cross you. While they gorillas out at midnight, toss them all
the go like this. If you decide your future, who are the leaders? Who are the shooters? Who are the leaders? Who are the shooters? Who are the leaders? Who are the shooters? Like this, if you decide your future, who are the leaders? Who are the shooters?
In my experience, only the illest shooters can properly transition to leading a crew of shooters and shooting along with them and getting arrested with them. And if it come down to dying, you dying along with them. I know, homie, but I would never follow you to battle if you never seen an arm of light right at you. And you can never tell me what the neighborhood in need of. If you ain't never lived inside the neighborhood you speak of, we gon' like this.
If you decide your future, who are the leaders? Who are the shooters? Who are the leaders? Who are the shooters?
Look,
who are the leaders? Who are the shooters? Like this, if you decide your future, who are the leaders? Who are the shooters?
It's the police with my every breath. Conscious rappers living life like fairy tales. I grow closer to death of jail with every step. I sold a piece of my soul with every piece I sold. We come from EBT, ramen noodles, and pizza rolls. Magazines for sources of trouble to make sinners fold. Long as I got work falling off the clock like hickory dickory. America, this is history.
Drillers, killers in the headline. You ain't a revolutionary if you never did fair time. Quoting the cider, but you wouldn't kill a fruit fly. Real life, three open cases so I could prove mine. Jesus was in Chicago, he probably gangbang. AK, lift like CT, Fletcher, maintain. Leaders and the students are same mom. Single mothers living next to her, the range mom.
Like this, if you decide your future, who are the leaders? Who are the shooters? Who are the leaders? Who are the shooters? Who are the leaders? Who are the shooters? Like this, if you decide your future, who are the leaders? Who are the shooters?
Tiroteo on West Florissant is flourishing. Revolution in the air, thank Ferguson. Unnamed shooters on the front line, serving them. Police had to retreat these streets, burning them. Time passes, what came from the ashes? In the aftermath, who paid, who casting? I don't see those faces that was masked in the actions. Caught them, homies backing, let's get it cracking.
One time for the Angela Davises, two times for Asada Shakur. Exercising my rights to carry, bitch. What you think all the guns is for? Rather go out standing, then down my knees. I'ma shoot a motherfucker, then cry in peace. Shake it off, reload, back on the front line. Time to wake that ass up, cause it's the crunch time.
They go like this, if you decide your future. Who are the leaders? Who are the shooters? Who are the leaders? Who are the shooters? Who are the leaders? Who are the shooters? Like this, if you decide your future. Who are the leaders? Who are the shooters?
Let us ha. Hey, hey, hey. Ho, 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 Hard Knock Radio. East, west, hard north, south. Radio, conectados. Man. Every set, every hood, barrio to barrio. Y'all stand up, stay righteous. Speaking to the thugs, one love. We know where y'all at. Top, Brown Buffalo. It's a hard knock life, gotta pay your bills. They want a song about bling, but it ain't real. We speak to the kids and the OGs. Organize, mobilize, be the change you wanna see. 415's bumping Hard Knock Radio. Brown Buffalo, all up in your stereo. Yo, and to the youth, live life like it's golden. Go dumb, go hard, but don't forget where you're going. We from the hood, so it's all to the good. Let us know this, what you're feeling is right. Let's get this understood. It's only one reason why we here today. We trying to make real music so the people can relate.
Learning from these hard knocks, slipping in these hard knocks, listening to hard knocks, questioning the hard knocks, learning through these hard knocks, living for this hip hop, listening to hard knocks, ripping to the hard side, learning from the hard knocks, living in these hard knocks, listening to hard knocks, questioning the hard knocks, learning through these hard knocks, living for this hip hop, listening to hard knocks, ripping to the hard side.
listening to KBOO Portland.
Help KBOO reach our Give Guide fundraising goal and get a chance to win a Portland Trailblazers fan package courtesy of Give Guide. This offer is only available if you donate today, December 17th. To donate and for more information about the Portland Trailblazers fan package, visit our website at kboo.fm/give.
Have you gotten your flu shot? It's never too late to protect yourself, your family, and your community against the flu. This year, it is more important than ever. Black and African Americans, people of color, pregnant people, people without health insurance or a regular health care provider, people with pre-existing conditions like asthma, diabetes, and cardiovascular disease, and people 65 and older are encouraged to get a flu shot. Multnomah County Health Department and Portland Community College are hosting a free weekly drive-through flu vaccine and COVID-19 testing clinic that will be held every Wednesday from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. until March 31st, 2020.